And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. And now let's welcome Mark Eaves, gubernatorial candidate for the state of Maine, Democratic Party. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, David. It's great to be on. I appreciate the opportunity.
You know, I guess the first basic question that I like to ask all the candidates is, why are you running for governor?
Sure. Well, I'm running for governor really the same reason I chose to go into the profession of helping people. I chose to go to the profession of marriage and family therapy, and I worked with a lot of families living in deep poverty, struggling, and led me to run for public office 10 years ago. I served in the state legislature for 8 years, 2008 to 2016. Four of those, I was fortunate to be elected by my peers as Speaker of the House. And I think we have a ton of opportunity in our state with the right leadership. I've had a front row seat to a lot of that opportunity passing us by, and want to get back and pick up where I left off and continue to do good work for the state. I just believe in my heart that there's so much that we can do. And I got three young kids. They're 13, 11, and 8, and I want them to be able to find their future right here in the state. So those are a couple of reasons why I'm running.
Okay, that's great. Well, the second question is pretty simple. I think it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Jobs growth has been strong. Unemployment is at 2.7%. Tax revenue is also strong, especially on the business side. Consumer confidence is nearing a high. Should we change course in what we are doing and why?
You know, I think one of the indicators that wasn't referenced that we really need to take a hard look at is that the wages are still low. People still aren't able to pay their bills, put a little bit of money away for vacation and college and retirement. So I think that we need to focus on increasing wages, and that's where we need to change course. We've got a plan that is a regional, statewide, but regional jobs plan that really focuses on partnerships with businesses and industries and how state government can be a partner in either developing new workforce training programs that meet a real need that will increase wages or additional training. But being a partner with business and industry, I think, is an important part of how state government can help people take more home in their paycheck.
Tell me a little bit more about that plan.
Sure. Well, it's really based on a couple projects that I was that I worked on when I was in the State House. The first was a logging training program that I went up to Fort Kent probably 3 years ago in the dead of winter and met with about 30 different logging contractors who had all identified a real need for their business, and that was a workforce training program that prepared students to go into the profession. And logging's changed a lot over the last several decades. Now you're operating million-dollar pieces of equipment, and there is no training program. So we partnered with the Professional Logging Contractors of Maine. Caterpillar donated, put in $1 million worth of private capital to start the program. The state put in some money. And now that program is rotating between three community colleges in the northern part of the state, and Northern Maine Community College, Eastern Maine Community College, and Washington County Community College. And it has a 100% job placement rate. So every student that graduates gets a good-paying job. These jobs start around $40,000 a year. You can buy a home with that type of money in many parts of the state, and you can stay right in the community where you want to. So it's that type of approach that I would bring to the governor's office of being a partner with businesses and industries, partnering with our public institutions of education, and making sure that we are training and have students graduating with employable credentials into fields that need those workers. So it's that approach that's looking at regional assets, partnering with folks, and getting the outcome and the results that I think is going to make sure people are having a livable wage.
You know, that fits right into the next question, which is that companies must compete today. Whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people have affected the way companies do business. This is a hiring challenge for many in the state. Some say the reason is that there's a skills gap that exists with the current older workforce, which is, of course, a very large workforce here in Maine. Do you agree that there's a skills gap issue, and what do you plan to do over the next 4 years if elected to deal with it?
There is absolutely a skills gap. Any business that I've talked to over the last 4 years When I ask them, what is the number one issue facing your business? It is the fact that they can't find enough trained, skilled workers to fill the jobs that they have. So when we look at our demographics in Maine, we're the oldest state in the nation. We have people that are going to be retiring. In fact, 50% of our workforce is eligible to retire in 10 years. That's a remarkable challenge for our state. And there's a skills gap currently, but we really have to look out 10 years and be prepared for this. The way that we're going to do it is the same way that I just described with that logging training program in the northern part of the state. And we used that same approach to start a program in the southern part of the state with a precision machining program. Same thing, met with businesses, identified the need, the curriculum, partnered with the community college system. That program also has a 100% job placement rate. It's been going for about 4 or 5 years now, and every graduate gets a job, and a good paying job. These are not minimum wage entry level jobs. These are jobs that you start at $18 an hour with a real career path. So there is absolutely a skills gap in this state. We have to have a leader that's going to put a focus on it. Using the experience that I've had working with businesses to create workforce training programs, I would do on day one. And the great thing is these are bipartisan initiatives. There's no political gaming here. People want, you know, their constituents to have good paying jobs. And in both of those examples, we worked with Republicans in the State House and outside the State House to make sure that those training programs got started. So I think there's a real need and a hunger to get right on it day one, and I'm prepared to do that.
This fits, again, right into the next question, which is the voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase its minimum wage every year for the next few years. It's currently $10 an hour. Some say it's not enough and should go as high as $15 or even $20 an hour. What's your position on the minimum wage versus the living wage, and how do you see your administration dealing with this statewide if elected?
Well, first of all, we need a livable wage for every person that goes to work and works 40 hours a week, works hard. You should be able to pay your bills and live a good life. Right now, that's just not the case. So I'm a strong supporter and advocate for increasing the minimum wage. I supported the last initiative to do that. I voted 5 times in the legislature to do that, and I support the raising of the minimum wage that was passed by the people of the state to make sure that we fully implement that. If I'm governor, I won't roll those back. We will move forward. Now, the outcry sometimes that you hear that this is going to crush business. Well, as you outlined from the beginning, David, our economy is doing very well. I haven't heard of any business closing because the minimum wage is going up. And I'm proud of the effort that I've worked on to increase the minimum wage. I think it's important, particularly in a state like Maine. We have income inequality here, just like the rest of the country. And I'm proud of my efforts to help in any way that I can to increase people's wages that are, you know, having to work 2 or more jobs just to barely meet their basic needs.
So just as a follow-up quick question, what would you consider to be the wage level minimum that you would expect or should expect employers to be dealing with under your administration?
So right now we're on track to get to $12 an hour by 2020 and then have indexing from there. Now, if we kept the indexing in way back, we would be at over $22 an hour, and that's a livable wage. Now, I understand that that's just not a reality, but I do believe strongly that anything that we can do to close the income gap between gap right now between the rich and the poor, we should do. So I'll be supporting implementing fully the $12 that's supposed to go into effect 2020 and supporting the indexing after that. So we also have to look at other costs, healthcare costs that really take a lot of money out of people's paycheck. I've got some ideas that I think will help bring down some costs, but that's another cost driver in people's budgets that more than the minimum wage, more than tax policy, the amount of money that comes out of people's paychecks because of health insurance is unsustainable.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and today our guest is Mark Eaves, Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Shulo. Employers are concerned with the impending recreational legalization of marijuana in the state of Maine, especially with the opioid epidemic. This is a violation of federal law, and many employers are very concerned at what that's going to do. What is your position on this topic?
Well, just like all the referendums, I think we need to implement the minimum wage, Medicaid expansion, adult use legalization of marijuana. So as it relates to employers, though, I think there's wide latitude for employers to continue to do the business practices that they currently do and make personal decisions around that. Nobody wants an employee on the job that's high. So I think that there needs to be continued appropriate practices there for employers to make sure that people are sober and safe, and what they do on their own free time is their own, own choice. But I think that there does need to be a pretty good degree of employer discretion on what they're comfortable with. So I think it varies, but generally speaking, supportive of the initiative. And as governor would implement it, and in fact the legislature overrode the governor's veto, so the governor's supposed to be doing the rules and regulations part about implementing the new system, but either way, whether he does or doesn't, on day one I'll get to work on it and have my administration follow through on what the people passed.
How do we solve the real issue of graduates leaving the state due to the reality or perception of either a lack of great job opportunities or a lack of good, high-paying jobs?
The jobs approach that I talked about before I think will lead to higher wages. But just to really bring into focus how much of a challenge this is and how much effort we need to put in making sure that we're keeping every graduate here in our state. If we, over the next 20 years, we built a wall, I know walls have been talked about, but we built a wall from New Hampshire to Canada, didn't let any kid out for the next 20 years, and they all get into our workforce. That wouldn't even be half of the number of people that we need to replace the retiring workers. So we have to do two things. One, make sure that we are connecting students to career paths that have good-paying jobs here. And the second is we have to be welcoming to any individual, no matter where you come from. If you want to come to Maine and work hard and plant roots, we need you here. Really actively reaching out across our borders to recruit more people here, more businesses, and making sure that we are connecting young people to career paths that are here, are needed. And again, with the retiring workforce, with our demographics, this is a critical problem for our state and a challenge, and I think starting in middle school and high school, talking about career paths for students that lead to good-paying jobs. I have a plan to have a heavy investment in vocational training programs. Every kid doesn't need to go to a 2 or 4 year college. If they do, that's great, but we need to honor and value every path to employment, and our vocational training programs in our high schools are a good start. But we have to make those alignments with the business community and what jobs are available with our education system. We can do a lot better than we are right now, and if we do that well, I think we're going to have more kids that can find an opportunity to stay here in the state and get good wages.
You mentioned it a little earlier in the conversation, but I'll bring it up again because it is a major question, and the issue is a huge concern to employers, and that is, of course, healthcare. Costs are going up. For example, if I took my company to New Hampshire, the healthcare costs for the exact same plan I can buy here in Maine would be 30% less. Same company, same plan. How do we deal with that? And also, do you agree with the fact that plans should be allowed over state lines? How about association plans? And what's your plan to address this critical issue in Maine over the next 4 years?
Well, and I've seen had a front row seat to this challenge. When I'm not running for governor, I have had the honor of leading an organization as the executive director called Woodford's Family Services. We provide services to kids and adults with disabilities. We have over 500 employees, and many of which are on health insurance plan. And we see this year over year go up, and we see that utilization, obviously, and prescription drug costs are the two primary drivers. The things that we can do, I mean, our demographics are what they are, and until we get more young people here to our state, we have a challenge. I believe in working with New Hampshire and Vermont, Massachusetts, if they'll play with us, of trying to figure out how can we, you know, have a compact or a consortium to where we can all be in it. I know that it's complicated, a lot of federal stuff that we got to work through, but I believe until we have universal health care, a single-payer health care system, we're never going to be able to drive down the costs in the way that we need to, because we're not going to have everybody covered. And when people don't have insurance, they go to the emergency room, the highest cost, least effective care, and that is socialized in a different way, where those who have private insurance pick up the tab. So I believe that we need to expand Medicaid in our state, just like New Hampshire did. I think that's a good idea. And I think we need to create a Medicaid buy-in option on the private health exchange. I know the businesses are impacted by that, but that is another option where if we create a public option where it's a Medicaid buy-in, we use federal subsidy dollars to have it. Right now in Maine, there's only two options, Harvard Pilgrim and community health options. If we create a third option through our Medicaid program, lower cost, better coverage, and I think it would be better for our state and lead us down the road of universal health care. Until we can control costs, which are out of control right now, by having everybody in, it's tough to manage those rate increases year over year, but we have to focus in on utilization of the highest cost users in our system. And if you look at the Medicaid part of it, it's similar to private insurance for companies as well, that 5% of the population that is covered uses 55% of the cost. So really doing good care management with those individuals, making sure that we're driving down those costs will help the overall cost for everybody. But you have to have a targeted strategy around that and really understand what are some of those biggest determinants of who uses the healthcare system most.
Infrastructure is a big issue here in Maine. And I don't mean just infrastructure of roads, bridges, rail, and so forth, which, of course, is a big deal. I'm also talking broadband and cell phone use. What are your plans to deal with this critical issue to help employers and employees when they're trying to communicate and do business?
So one of the things that I've heard quite a bit is people that can work mobily anywhere in the world would come here if they had a connection. And they just don't in most parts of the state. So my plan to build out a broadband infrastructure would be to bond in a similar way that we do for transportation. These types of investments are we're gonna need to borrow money and partner with municipalities and businesses and be true, public-private partnerships to help build out our infrastructure. And this is an investment that I think people will think it, is worthy of their taxpayer dollars because it's going to benefit should benefit the entire state. In the same way that we invested in our ports in Portland, and now we have a rail that connects right to the port, and we can take shipping containers off and put it right on rail and ship our products out, import and export, that benefited the whole state. It was an investment in Portland, but the governor pushed that, and that's one thing that I certainly agree with him on. Broadband can work in the same way, where it's connecting the rest of us to the world, and any opportunity we can work with businesses and municipalities to partner, because it costs. I mean, it's an enormous cost, but I think bonding through the state's capacity right now, especially while interest rates are low, is a good approach, and we need to, treat broadband like other, public infrastructure projects like roads and bridges, and really understand that it is the highway for 20.
Well, I mean, when you think about even just cell phone coverage, I mean, you drop cell phone coverages just in Portland. Well, forget about the rest of the state. I mean, it is a big issue for businesses that, and more. You're seeing cell phone use being the number one way businesses communicate. Employees call in, communicate. Employees are on the road. I mean, it's a big issue and concern.
No, it really is. And I've traveled the state quite a bit, certainly over this last year and over the last 8 to 10 years. And you're right, it is not good coverage. And the more and more that our workforce is becoming mobile, our asset is our quality of life. I mean, when people move here, it's because they want the quality of life that, that Maine has to offer. But if you can't be connected through your cell phone or through a strong internet connection, you just don't have that option. And that's something that I think the state can take a leadership role on.
Let's discuss the issue of Maine state income and employer taxes. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anyone, and I really don't really know anyone, that says, hey, I'd really like to pay more income tax. I'd really like to, as an employer, spend more of my money on paying taxes rather than investing in my business or hiring another person. So having said that, the question then becomes, you as governor, how would you handle this critical bottom line issue for employers and employees?
So one thing that I've observed over the last 8 years in the governor's administration, the tax cut that he did provide through the income tax cut, I would want to roll back. And the reason is because that really only benefited the majority of it, high-income earners. And it was shifted onto the backs of municipalities and property tax owners. When the bill finally became due for that income tax cut, which was $440 million, most of which, nearly all of it, $400 million of it, wasn't paid for. When the bill came due 2 years later, it was paid for through zeroing out revenue sharing that helps towns meet their budgets and keep property taxes low, and a very popular property tax program called the Circuit Breaker Program that was nearly eliminated. So I think we need to have a more progressive income tax structure. We'd like to take a strong look at that. I believe we'll be able to make the investments that we need to really compete in our education system and put, you know, we can look at our tax expenditures in the same way and really see, are we getting a benefit for the tax dollars that we're foregoing? We've never really had a thorough review. I believe in targeted tax exemptions and incentives for businesses, particularly to attract businesses here, but I would want to make sure that those wages are livable wages, as we were talking about before, and provide good benefits. So, you know, I would agree with you. Generally, people don't love to pay their income taxes, but they do love to drive on paved roads, and we need a lot of work there, and they want a police officer or a fire department to respond. So I think it's about communicating what that investment looks like and that it's worth it. So we need to take another hard look at our income tax structure and make sure that everybody's paying their fair share. I'd be committed to having that conversation and rebalancing our tax code.
As we look at trying to bring employees or more people to the state of Maine, one of the challenges is the overall cost of living in the state of Maine in comparison to other localities across the country. And I'm not just talking New Hampshire, I'm talking about other states, even Massachusetts. If you look at the cost of living for outside of Boston, it is just about the same cost of living right here in the Portland vicinity. Yet the income levels, as well as the cost in terms of not only taxes, but energy and all other aspects of business, are just as high as they are outside of the city of Boston without the benefits of a metropolitan area. How do you see, in the next 4 years, your administration trying to get people to come to Maine to fill the roles and the jobs that we need to have filled when they're not seeing the same benefits as other states?
So when I have these conversations with folks around the state, I often ask, why do you live here? And it is always about the quality of life and the communities that we have. To, you know, when I'm talking to young families, that's what it is. And as I mentioned, I've got three kids, are 13, 11, and 8 now. I want to be, and I guess somebody did the research the other day, looking at other governors around the country. I could be the youngest governor in the state and the oldest state in the nation. And I want to tell a different type of story than being told right now. One of what it's like to raise a young family in our communities, our quality of life. That's what we need to focus on, our assets. I would agree that we need to do whatever we can to drive down costs and increase wages. My regional, jobs plan, I think, addresses a lot of that. And if we do that really well, then we'll be able to attract more people here to the state for higher wages, and they can live in a beautiful state that we all love, and benefit from the quality of life that Maine has to offer. I think we need to talk about what's going right with the state and what we have to offer. And if we have to realize and recognize our challenges which I think we do and are sober about them. But we also have to make sure that we're talking about the good things about Maine, and that just hasn't happened recently. And I think, you know, that doesn't cost any money, and I think can put Maine back on the map in a way that will give people a look here when they're looking to move. That's the type of, you know, leadership that I would like to bring to the State House and the governor's office.
Mark, I want to thank you for being on the show. We have one last question for you. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Why should employers or even employees in the state of Maine vote for you?
Well, I would say because I have seen both from the business side and from the, you know, side of people struggling day in and day out with the profession that I chose. I'm currently, you know, I run an organization. I sign the fronts and backs of paychecks. I understand those cost drivers, and I understand it's not easy. But you would have a governor that would show up every day, that would work with people that agree with me and don't agree with me in the same way that I did for 8 years in the State House, four as Speaker of the House. I think we need to restore civility in the state government again and get back to the business of the leadership of George Mitchell and Olympia Snow and Margaret Chase Smith and Bill Cohen. That's how we're going to start solving some of our bigger issues, both on the employer and employment side, but also, you know, big challenges like our opioid crisis and others that are facing the state right now. I think it's time. You know, people have joked with me that they think it's time for our state to have a family therapist that has some real life experience and has a vision for our state that is positive and tells a different story about Maine. So I would be honored to earn support. We have the primary coming up on Tuesday. We're going to see who the nominee is that goes into the fall election, but I hope to continue to have these conversations over the next several months as we lead into the November election.
Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today to be our guest. I look forward to seeing the election results here in a very short period of time. And, of course, if you become the gubernatorial candidate, I hope you'll come back and do an hour show with us.
I think that would be great. I look forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to today's HR Power Hour special program. It was an honor to speak with Mary Mayhew and Mark Eaves, candidates for governor of this great state of Maine. I hope you learned a lot from it. Get out there and vote in the primary on June 12th and make your voice heard. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM.